Hello, everyone. Thank you for having us here. It's our first time here, so please be kind. It's like, for both of us, it's the first time here, so we're a little bit nervous. Thank you. So we're here to talk about practical CI/CD observability with OpenTelemetry. This is the abstract we have submitted, and of course we don't expect you to go through the whole thing because it's just enormous, but like, if we could abstract the abstract in a way, this talk is about enhancing your pipeline's ability and performance, like by bringing observability to every stage of software delivery. So we're going to answer two questions like, how we can identify flakiness and bottlenecks during like our CI/CD process, and like envision a future of effortless visibility. And again, we're going to talk about what's the role of OpenTelemetry on that, and also the role it plays in shaping CI/CD's future, and explore all the challenges and opportunities ahead. So if I go to the next slide, a little bit about us. I'm Dimitris, a software engineer at Grafana Labs at the Platform Productivity Squad. And?
Yeah, and I'm Giordano, Gio, for friends. I'm a software engineer for the Explore Squad at Grafana Labs.
Yeah. So this is the agenda. As I said, we're going to start by defining what CI really is, and then talk about current issues we have with CI/CD systems, and then we're going to do a small intro to OpenTelemetry and how we use it, really, why it is important to own our data, and then practical use cases, where we are and what's next. So all that being said, we can proceed to the next slide with a question to you all. So what is CI? We're looking for the definition of CI here. Anyone there to guess? It's fine if not, but okay, I'll proceed. Say again? Yeah, we're not looking for continuous integration. We're looking for the definition of that. So CI, yes, thank you very much, is continuous integration. But like, the definition of that is, as some experts have defined it in a couple of books, the thing is that continuous integration definition can mean different things to different people. Like, it's all a matter of like a perspective, where you're looking that from, like what CI means to everyone. But one thing is for sure, like continuous is the only thing that's going to be there all the time, because we're talking about a never-ending feedback loop, which keeps improving stuff and gives us visibility over our CI/CD processes. So we can move to the next question, which is, what is CI like for real this time? And I would like, again, if someone dares to guess.
It's a black box.
Yes, right. Yeah, go on.
Running test.
Yes, running test could be. So again, CI is a list of things. Like, it's a mechanism to, for example, reduce repetitive manual processes or generate deployable software at any time and any place. And of course, squash flaky tests and flaky builds and prevent people from getting paged at 3 a.m. in the morning, because we don't want to spend human hours during the night. They're really important for us. So the next slide is about, if you think that this is complicated, I think not. I think, this has happened to at least every one of us, at least like once, I think. It starts from testing, building, deploying, and then waiting for changes, or wait for 3 a.m. maintenance windows, you can see here, to errors and downtime and panicking. And also, when we have resolved all those issues, we all go to LinkedIn after that and say, I'm a troubleshooting expert, or like I'm DevOps expert, automation expert. So that's what we do, because that's who we are.
Need to brag.
Yes, true, exactly. So the next slide is another question. The next slide, what is CI, but like for real, real this time? And what we're looking for is a single word. If anyone dares to guess that single word.
Automation.
Pipelines, automation.
Alerting.
Alerting, yes, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for alerting. So CI and alerting serve a common purpose, or at least they try to serve a common purpose. So they work closely together as essential components of continuous automated monitoring. So you can see that both of them are proactively identifying issues, or we have like continuous system monitoring, or all those things, and then CI, we're looking at alerting as the left shift of CI, basically, which means that if we have affecting alerting within CI, ensures that threshold breaches and like potential problems are going to vanish. And we CI needs to focus on like robust build for new releases. So together, CI and alerting share a common goal, like prompt problem identification, fortifying system reliability and sustainability. As you can see from the picture, they need to be like holding hands forever because that's what they do. We'll go to the next slide. So a few things about continuous integration. We already talked about some of them, but like continuous integration is the guard in early stages. Like we can detect changes, maintain build's health, and constantly monitor system signals. And like CI is used to catch issues before they breed, really. So if we go to the next slide, we're adding alerting next to that, but we're not actually comparing those two. We just want to show you how closely, like how tightly coupled they are together. So alerting is like, is our alerting system like for later stages. It identifies problems as well, maintains SLOs and monitor systems just like CI does. But we should see that alerting is a mechanism to be used just in case CI has something has slipped through CI and we didn't catch it. So when we have alerting in place and CI in place as well, we need to know that there are not two components running in parallel, right? They are like CI lays the groundwork, and then alerting responds to threats. So they are like unstoppably working together to serve the same purpose. So an important thing to remember about alerting is that every time we need to create actionable alerts. So if something slips through CI, we need to know, we need to get the alert, have a runbook, have some documentation, automatically resolve some alerts if we don't think that are important enough to wake up someone in the middle of the night and all that. So where we are now with CI/CD systems and like what is this whole talk amounting to? So observability so far, as you can see here, is about like, all the all-time classic concepts we know, like from printing here, we have all done this like in our early stages, I guess. From printing that, we're still doing that? Yeah, okay, we're still doing that. And then from paging the like platform team, or for like from having three different platforms, like we can have GitHub or GitLab or Atlassian or a Bitbucket, whatever you use, and then find a broken test, go from there to your favorite CI vendor, and then go from there to Grafana or Datadog or your favorite like visualization tool to try and correlate those errors together. So focusing, as you can see down there, if like the sole focus of observability is at the run part of things, this neglects valuable insights from earlier phases like code review or building or testing, and like incomplete observability across the CI pipeline leads to limited visibility during earlier stages. We don't know what happened during the build phase, for example, or the test phase, or we have difficulty in root cause analysis, or increased mean time to recovery. Gio is going to talk to you more about that and how this is related to DORA metrics, and also missed optimization opportunities. Like we know that our CI pipelines take a lot to run, but we don't actually know what to improve if we want to make them shorter, make them faster. So next question, typical this is fine meme. We know we deploy something, everything catches fire, we are happy, and what we do basically is that we try to mitigate the fire. But when the observability part of things is so late in the deployment and development and deployment life cycle, I think it's too late. So there was no reason to let it last this long and get this bad. So how we can be more proactive? If we shift our focus a little bit to the left, we can address issues before they escalate and be proactive. We can enhance the efficiency by catching problems early in the process. We can ensure robustness by focusing on like the integrity of our builds and tests, and also be mindful about the cost reduction, because this is also a really important topic, and minimize expenses associated with post-deployment troubleshooting and downtime. So the next slide, if we assume that we have focused our shift left, the other, so, you know, things turn the other way around. So instead of having the fire everywhere and then us in the middle, like being agnostic of what's happening, it's the other way around. So we have a lot of time to mitigate the fire. We can actually be proactive. And as we prioritize observability earlier in the development process, we are identifying and addressing issues actually before they become fire. We tried many tools. We tried to find the best way to set up like such a system so we can proactively like react to all those problems. So the tool we found easier to use and address like all those issues in CI/CD pipeline is OpenTelemetry, because it helps us create like standard patterns and semantic conventions. Gio is going to talk to you more about that in a little bit. So in the next slides, we're going to show how we used OpenTelemetry to get to exactly this point where it's, even if something appears, it's still too early and we can you know, act and fix the issue before we wake up people in the middle of the night. So stage is yours. Yep.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Okay, thank you. So first question, what is OpenTelemetry? Does anyone knows ever work with? One? So no one, okay. No, okay, a few people. Anyway, as a short definition of OpenTelemetry is, it's an observability framework which is designed to manage and create telemetry data, such as metrics, logs, traces, events, whatever. There is, of course, a more comprehensive definition of OpenTelemetry, which is way longer, way more complex, which you can find on the OpenTelemetry website. For this case, though, what I want to focus on here is two bits of the definition, which is semantic convention and owning your own data. Now, semantic conventions, we can think about them as a standard. Like it's a standard way of naming things, of a standard way of defining attributes for your logs, for your metrics, for your traces. And I mean, we all know this. If we think about semantic conventions as standards, we can divide them by two different areas, or we can categorize them in two different ways, by signal type, such as metrics, logs, traces, events, whatever, and by area. Now, by area means we have telemetry semantic conventions for databases, we have semantic conventions for cloud providers, we have semantic conventions for a lot of different things, really, for log files. Something that is not there yet, though, is semantic convention for continuous integration and continuous delivery. Now, why this is important, in my opinion? This is important because, I mean, we use some CI tool. I guess everyone here uses a different CI tool. But regardless of what we use, we can see that at the end of the day, the data that is behind each CI tool is the same, regardless of whether someone calls it stage, someone calls it job, someone calls it status or outcome or whatever. The underlying data, such as like duration, the job name, the outcome of a CI system, is the same. Now, I'm not extremely familiar with every CI systems out there, but at some point I was trying to figure out why in our CI we had a test that sometimes was taking 3 minutes to a test, like a pipeline, that sometimes was taking only 3 minutes to complete, while some others up to 9 or 10, which, I mean, without any code changes. So like, if you talk about flakiness, yeah, that's part of like test failing. Other part is why sometimes they take too long. Easy peasy, I think. I wrote some totally reliable Go code. No, okay. It was very good code. So basically what code was doing was getting stuff out of the drone database and pushing it to Loki, Tempo, and Mimir for later analysis. It worked great. Worked perfectly. Now, what happened is that we were able, at the end of the day, even if the code wasn't very good, we were able to at least look at something outside of our CI system. Why this? Because our CI system didn't provide us with the UI, with the tools to query for the data we were looking for. So we were trying to analyze why something was happening, and our UI wasn't able to do so. So okay, I share the news with my team, and I mean, I guess every one of you has been there at some point in their life, in your life. They got too excited. Ivana wanted us to have it, the log data on Elasticsearch. Piotr was, which is another colleague, wanted to get tracing data from Git actions instead of drone. And yeah, no, that code was not good enough. I mean, back to the drawing board. What happens now? We need to figure out a way of getting data out of GitLab CI, drone, GitHub Actions, whatever. I don't know. What else? Bitbucket. I don't know if they have a CI system. I'm not sure about. And we need to push it to every database out there, from Graphite, Tempo, Elasticsearch, I don't know, whatever, Jaeger. I mean, it sounds like a very silly question. Like I bet there is none of us that really uses 10 different databases to manage their telemetry data. Also because then, you know, this is what was going to happen. We had to write code to get data out of every CI system to push it to every other database system. And I said no, like I wasn't going to do that. But this highlights a very important point. That's owning your data. When I started thinking about owning my data, what I thought about was mostly owning the hardware in which the data was going to be stored. So like owning the hard drive or having it stored on one of my machines. I think that that's not exactly the point we need to make here. I think owning your data means you being able to decide where the data goes, where and how to store the data. We can very well be using a cloud database provider to store our data. The important bit is that we decide where the data is going to be stored, and we decide, and we have the ability to use the data however we want. The reason why OpenTelemetry is important and fits very well the picture is that by defining standards and by defining a specification for which data can be transferred and stored, not stored, but transferred, We are able to only take care of the first part of the equation here. We only need to take data out of the CI systems, and then OpenTelemetry is going to take care about converting and sending to the database we need. What we did was we built an OpenTelemetry collector. Does any of you knows what a collector distribution is? A few. Okay, so an OpenTelemetry collector distribution is basically a set of pre-built components. It's a binary that you can run, of course, and you can configure to do things. It consists, very reductively, of receivers, processors, and exporters. Receivers are the components that allow you to get data in. Can be like watching at log files. Can be even listening on Bluetooth Low Energy and check for things over the air. Can be extracting metrics from some running services. There are processors that transform this data in the format that you need. They add attributes, they modify attributes, or they remove them. And exporters that send this data out to your database of choice. The thing is here is that for those exporters, we didn't write anything. Like those are already open source exporters. They are more for Elasticsearch, for whatever, like really Jaeger or you name it. So the only bit we had to do was writing a drone receiver, which was getting data out of drone to pipe into OpenTelemetry, and then push it to Loki, Tempo, and Prometheus. There are some practical examples. There is a Jenkins plugin that traces data out of of Jenkins and sends it via the OTLP format. Kins wrote these other GitHub actions that runs commands and exports the execution of these commands as trace data. And of course, our own experiment, which is very incomplete, but very well free to take a look at. Now, what this unlocked for us? As I said, first of all, there was these performance issues with our first test. Second thing, at some point we had this test here. That was a bit flaky, was failing sometimes not. Of course, worked on my machine, work on Ivana's machine, probably. But yeah, we couldn't figure out how to do it, what to do with it, because we would disable it, but then when we were going to enable it, if you cannot really reproduce the issue locally. Now, by having those, by getting this data out of our CI and pushing the build logs into our observability system, into our log instance, we were able to trace back from the build that you see on the right to the logs for that build, trace back to the first time that failed test in our CI. And from there, if you look down here, this is an attribute that we thought was valuable. We had a build number, which is a unique ID for drone, which then pointed out to the first pull request that introduced that test or that flakiness. With that, we were able to identify what was causing the actual issue, which was a test which was totally unrelated, running a different suite, but turns out that was causing this flakiness. Something else that we were able to do was, so first of all, like one, I don't know, silly thing that we did but we liked, was to create a custom UI within Grafana to mimic sort of like the UI that you have when you look at the output of your set system. I mean, there is some value maybe in it, but like the important bit here is that we own the data, so we were able to do something which was funny. We spent maybe one day on it. And yeah, it will look good. The second thing, however, is more important. Now, in Grafana, we have a very complex release system. I mean, very complex. We maintain a set of different release branches that in theory, should need to be releasable at any given time. Of course, like everyone, like for everyone, something things breaks. Sometimes things break, and you don't know why because you are not looking at it. Sometimes a commit you make in main breaks something else somewhere else because you backported it, but you didn't really test it. What we were able to do with this was keep getting metrics and stats out of our CI system, out of our builds, so that we could build a timeline of our deployment branches. This means that at any given time, we had a single pane of glass to look at what was the status of our release processes, so that our release team could just go here and check whether something was broken they needed to act upon before trying to do a release. We also had visibility over stats over the number of running pipelines or failed pipelines. We can dig into builds. We can do a lot of different things, which we didn't feel like they were possible in our CI system UI. So what this unlocks? Really anything. Like the point here is that we are trying to define standards. We are trying to get into this space. It's a very early stage concept, but what it may unlock, given that you own your data, it's really up to you. We can talk about DORA metrics, so having ways of reducing mean time to restoring services. We can talk about generating red light metrics, like request error durations for your CI, so how long they take, did something that happened started increasing the rate of our failing test. The duration started going up because of something we did on our environment. That's something that, for us, it unlocked quite well. Some other example, code coverage over time. There is no reason why you cannot export test results as JUnit maybe and then graph them on Grafana and keeping track of your coverage. You can do flakiness detection like we did before. So you start seeing that the test started failing at some point. You can detect that. You can create an alert on flakiness. And you can trace back to where the test started flaking. At that point, we think it's for us, and we think it was way easier to identify what was the actual root cause of the flakiness. Then yeah, we have security, whatever. Like really, like the data is yours. Your own data, you decide what to do with it. Again, all in all, what is unlocked for us at this point we're using three different CI systems. Four.
I think three.
Okay, we're using three different CI systems for different reasons. But all in all, what it unlocked for us was bringing all the data in together for to work with within Grafana and to have our production metrics together with the with the pre-production metrics. Now, what's next? We have formed an OpenTelemetry working group about CI/CD observability. There are more stuff to come. Join the discussion. So if you have your own issue that you want to fix or your own use case that you want to bring up to the group, please join the Cloud Native Computing Foundation Slack channel. This is the proposal for the standard. And yeah, that's it. So if you have any questions.
Any questions? Yeah, up there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
More
try.
Or less.
We will try.
Yeah, I was wondering what kind of sensing you use for collecting traces.
What kind of?
Sampling. Based on
sampling.
So far we are not sampling anything. Like we are doing continuous tracing for our for every.
So you're
we are collecting like we are generating a trace for every build that goes through the CI system.
Yeah.
So for PRs it's a bit different because we don't want to create bad data like useless data. It's also because it costs money. Like having this amount of data costs money. What we do. Is we generate data only for pipelines that happen on those branches we care about. So if you make a PR and the PR is okay, it gets merged into main. After it gets merged, we run another pipeline, the same one before the PR, and that one we collect data from. Mm. That way, basically, we have the flakiness on our release branch and not on the PRs, because in PRs, I mean, it's not flaky. Yeah. I mean, okay, you can have flakiness in PRs, but maybe you're doing something and it breaks the build, but there is maybe it's not a valid data point.
Yeah, if we did that for every branch, basically, we would face cardinality explosion, and it's going to be so expensive. So you know, you have to define which branches you're interested in. For example, in Grafana, we have the main branch, which is like the main branch of our repo, and then some version branches for all the versions, the different versions that Grafana have, for example. And this is what we're interested in.
But again, you own the data. You can decide to do it all your main.
Any other? Yeah.
Apart from flaky tests, what else have you found by exporting data from the CI?
What's the case?
Yeah, number of unnecessary. Apart from flaky tests, what other metrics can we get, like useful metrics we can get out of that? So I think. For example, stuck runners, like runners were stuck in, like, for example, unused repositories. We didn't have like a way to know that there was a runner like running all the time. We're getting timeouts and all that. This one problem. Then another problem is the number of restarts in builds, which is basically related to flaky tests. But like, there was no reason, there was no way for us to know how many. Like for Gio, for example, went and restarted his build because it was problematic, because there was a bug, or because there was an actual issue with runner. It doesn't have to be necessarily code related. So we needed to know how many, how big was the number of the restarts, and then try to find the root cause of what caused this, basically.
There was also something I want to add, maybe, is that We are also able to improve a bit the performance of our pipeline. And by performance, I mean just allocating more resources. By doing that, we were also maybe able to reduce the cost a bit because pipelines were running for shorter, there was less queue. So it's also something like improving performance also comes from having the data about how long they take, and that's it.
Yeah, also, last thing is that, you know, we also had issues where we used extremely powerful runners to build docs. for example. And, you know, docs builds took, I don't know, a minute, where if the docs build took like 5 minutes, it was not going to be the end of the world because, you know, they're docs. They're introduced like small changes, really important changes, don't get me wrong, but small. So we could move away from like really powerful runners to something smaller just to help like some with some like cost reduction and stuff. Any other questions? Do we have time? We have one up there. Do we have time?
No.
Come join us. Come join us at the Grafana booth, please.